Now, this is very strange, and I don't understand why we skipped to Rahab, and I didn't have enough time to think about it. So, but we're skipping from we're going from Abraham to Lot to Rahab, and there's several different ways we could look at these relationships. Abraham to Lot to Rahab. We could be looking at progenitors of the Messiah. You know, because these are people listed in his genealogy, so to speak. Maybe we're looking just at Gentiles. Maybe right now we're just looking at Gentiles. These are all Gentiles. I'm not sure what the relationship is. Or maybe we're just looking at hospitality stories. Because, and that seems to be actually closer. Oh, yeah. Sodom and Gomorrah is absolutely a story about hospitality. Mm-hmm.
And weren't there some Gentiles who were part of the attached to Moses' tabernacle? Who were the... I thought there were some guys in there that were... Are there Gentiles as part of the Torah or not?
Hmm?
Are there Gentiles as part of the story with Moses?
I'm just not following you.
Okay.
I'm still trying to get to where you're at here.
I thought there were some Gentiles who traveled along with that were Midianites or something like that.
Mixed multitude, but
I thought there were some of the
You know, he married into the Midianite.
Some of the people who traveled along with were...
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay, yeah, so Moses...
Make themselves part of
it. Yeah, Moses... well, there is a mixed multitude that goes up out of Egypt. But Moses... there's the Kenites. I think you're talking about the Kenites.
Yeah.
They are descendants of the Midianites. The descendants of their family that Moses married into, the Midianite family of Jethro and Reuel that Moses married into. They're called the Kenites. And you know a famous Kenite is Yael, Yael of tent peg fame, right?
Right.
So that's probably, yeah. All right, so, well, along the same lines of, I mean, that's another hospitality story. He doesn't bring that one up, but Yael is, she says, yeah, come on in to the Canaanite general, Sisera, right? So come on in, lay down here, let me get you something to drink. You know, she gave him curds and milk. Yeah, go to sleep. Rocked him to sleep. Well, because of her faith in hospitality, Rahab the harlot was saved. What? She was saved from the fall of Jericho, right? So it's interesting, we never really think, you know, another place these characters are associated, James does this. In the Epistle of James, he says, take Abraham, for example. Abraham was saved by what he did, not just by what he believed. Rahab was saved by what she did, not by just what she believed. So James puts these two examples right next to each other. Well, Clement is going to summarize the story. He summarizes the story of Rahab here. The spies were sent to Jericho by Joshua, the son of Nun. The king of the land realized they had come to spy. He sent men to capture them, intending to put them to death. The hospitable Rahab. She's hospitable. Of course she's hospitable. It's her job. she's a hospitality worker, you could say. The hospitable Rahab, however, took them and hid them in an upstairs room under some flax stalks. Now, the apostolic teaching is also, just like I said, they're fascinated with Enoch, they're fascinated with Lot, and they're not so much with Lot, but Lot and Ruth, we'll put them in the same, and they're fascinated with Rahab. Why? Why do we have Rahab being mentioned here in Hebrews, in James, and in Matthew? Because she is also in the line of the Master.
Because
Rahab is one of the progenitors of Yeshua. So there's a lot of, apparently they had a lot of teaching on Rahab.
Is she kind of a prophetess?
Yeah, yeah, she's... Yeah,
because she makes that statement. Then she makes the statement about why she's doing this with the
yep.
with these two guys.
Yep.
And
Clement actually punches that up quite a bit. I compared this to the Septuagint because ordinarily Clement is quoting from the Septuagint, not this time. This time he's just telling the story. He's just sort of like telling it in his own words. And so he says, she hides him and then, and so on. Yeah, the men, she sends off the pursuers in another direction. And then she says to the two spies, I am absolutely convinced, and that's what I mean by punching it up. She says, I am absolutely convinced that the Lord your God is handing this country over to you, for fear and terror have fallen on all the inhabitants. Therefore, when you do take it, save me and my father's house. So this is, Clement sees this as she's a prophet. She has a spirit of prophecy. And they said to her, it shall be exactly as you have said. Therefore, when you learn that we are coming, gather together all your family under a roof and they will be saved. But anybody found outside your house will perish. Why is he telling us all this? He didn't go into this much detail with the other stories.
Okay. I think there's something about that scarlet.
Yes. There you go.
Because on the temple, they put the scarlet and it turned white.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I didn't think of that connection. But yeah, the teaching of the apostolic communities. And maybe this is the Torah teaching of our master, I don't know. But the teaching of these early apostolic communities were fascinated with that scarlet thread that was hanging out of Rahab's window. So, well, I looked at this when I had to write on this. And it is fascinating. Because in Joshua 2:12, what she says when she says, give me a sign, she says, give me a sign of truth. Give me an Oat Emmet. And so already we'd be going, ooh, a sign of truth. What's the sign of truth? It's already suggesting some deeper meaning in the story. But it gets better. They say, use this cord. And the word for cord is tikvat, which means threaded together. But it's a homonym for hope. So this cord of scarlet thread in the window is the sign of truth. This hope of scarlet is the sign of truth. So this language in the Hebrew was suggestive to the apostles and to the early believers. And the story itself, everybody in her house will be saved and so on, sounds like a metaphor for salvation. And so this is what we find. Clement says, in addition, they gave her a sign that she should hang from her house something scarlet, making it clear, and it's hardly clear, making it clear that through the blood of the Lord, redemption will come to all who believe and hope in God. Did you hear that? Not the thunder, the hope, the word hope. You see, dear friends, not only faith, but prophecy is found in this woman. All right, so I want to look at this a little bit closer.
Can I just ask a really quick question?
Yep.
I thought there was a story where there were two goats, one representing Eliel, I can't remember the names, but one goat was sacrificed, the other one was taken out in the desert.
Right.
With a scarlet on it, pushed over.
Yeah, this is what Jeanette was referring to, or was it Tybee?
So when it was pushed over, then the thread would turn white.
Yes.
And the redemption happened.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
I don't know the two names or two brothers.
Those are the goats from the Yom Kippur ceremony in Leviticus 16. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. And maybe we're making a connection to that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what I
wonder. One famous rabbi says that when the spies said this to Rahab, he says, the spies were hinting to Rahab, by joining us, you have hope. the tikvat, again, you have hope of attaining the true everlasting life of the world to come. So look at that. Yeah. Same thing.
Where did the rabbi get that one?
Well, he's getting it from the same. I'm thinking he's looking at the same words, the same buzzwords here. You and your family will be saved. A sign of truth. And the hope. Thus, the twine, the tikvat, symbolized Rahab's lifeline, her connection to Hashem's people, whose glorious future she would now share. And that's the Rahab story. Okay, this doesn't stop with Clement. We can also pull it out of Justin Martyr and Irenaeus, who are both second century guys. So I've got that on the back of your sheet. And I'll just give you a quick read through of these. And as the blood of the Passover upon the doorpost saved those in Egypt, so too the blood of Christ will deliver from death those who have believed. Through this sign, God announced the future salvation of humanity by the blood of Christ ahead of time. Also, he's using the Passover blood as that foreshadows the blood of Christ. He says, okay, and also, the spies sent to Jericho by Joshua, son of Nun, gave Rahab the prostitute the sign of a scarlet cord. So isn't that interesting? He says, the scarlet cord is just like the blood of the Passover lamb. Just think, everybody inside the house that was marked by the blood was saved. Everybody inside the house that was marked by the scarlet cord was saved. So they were told to tie it to the window through which she lowered them to escape from their enemies, symbolically illustrating the blood of Christ, by which those who were formerly prostitutes, like Rahab, and unrighteous men from all nations, like Rahab, a Gentile from all nations, are being saved, receiving forgiveness for sins, and continuing no longer in sin. Justin didn't make this up. This is teaching that he knew from the broader community of faith. Justin's sitting over there in Ephesus as he's writing this. And I think that's where he is. And, you know, I mean, who taught in Ephesus? I mean, there was a lot of apostolic action in Ephesus. Or take Irenaeus, for example. And Irenaeus learned from, slow down, think. Irenaeus learned from John's disciple, well, who's that guy that, Ignatius's friend, I'm just drawing a blank. We even have an epistle by him. Famous martyrdom story. Well, never mind. So anyway, the point is, Irenaeus is in the chain of transmission from the apostles. Rahab the prostitute condemned herself in that she was a Gentile, guilty of all sins. Well, most of the sins. Nevertheless, she welcomed the two spies who were spying out all the land and hid them at her home. And at the time, the seven trumpets sounded, and the entire city in which she lived collapsed into ruin. After everything was over, Rahab the prostitute was saved, together with everyone in her house, through faith in the scarlet sign, which symbolized the Passover and the redemption and the exodus of the people from Egypt. So, we've got, count them here, we've got three sources that we can cross-reference with each other, and we could put them together, if we ever had the time, we could put them together and recreate an apostolic midrash that was, you know, probably the teaching of Peter, the teaching of the apostles, on this particular Bible story.
And is there some, just curiosity, is there some parallel where when Christ was on the cross, there was red blood, but then that was the Christ entering white, was forgiveness of sins? Is that a fallacy? Okay, I don't know.
I appreciate your asking. However, there is one story that when Paul was beheaded, his blood was white as milk. So that's similar. A similar story. Yeesh. Yeah. Oh yeah, like that robot on Alien.
It just nags at me that all of these current professors, Jewish professors who are teaching New Testament, who are supposed to know all this, but they never reference the scarlet ribbon or, mm-hmm. or string or whatever. They don't reference it to connect it to anything.
Who are we talking about?
Yeah, I'm talking about some of the current scholars that are Jewish, and they're teaching New Testament.
Uh-huh.
At the,
like Jill Levine?
Yes.
Nailed it.
She makes no connection.
Well, she would. I think she would.
Not the only one.
She, I, if she was teaching Clement, she would point out all this stuff. I think she would. She would say, look. She wouldn't say, this is what I believe. She would just say, look, this is what Clement believed and what these people, look how these early Christians made these connections, and this must have been a Jewish idea. All right. Okay. And we're just about to get to the really good stuff, huh? So, you know, in Jewish tradition, Rahab converts and marries Joshua.
Like the Joshua?
The Joshua. And becomes a mother to a line of priests and prophets. So that's interesting. With Clement's statement, this woman, prophecy is found in this woman. However, in apostolic tradition, she marries Salmon, the son of Nachshon, and becomes the mother of the line of Judah, and through whom our master comes. So we have to go with the apostles. We don't get a vote in this, by the way. We go with the apostles. But it's just interesting that you have two competing traditions in this case.
I thought she married one of the spies that she saved. That wasn't it?
Well, maybe Salmon, the spies are anonymous. So maybe,
not.
Yeah, the spies are not named. They're not named, but...
Maybe I heard that somewhere.
Yeah.
Somebody told me. I missed something you said. I thought you said she buried.
Married.
She married. Okay.
Married Joshua.
Your accent's getting you.
Where's that?
Way.
What's the source for that?
Well, it's on your sheet. Megillah 14b. The Talmud, Megillah 14b.
Oh, okay.
Ruth Rabbah 2:1.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the source for her marrying Salmon, which is pronounced Salmon. Salmon. Like Salmon. 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 But it looks like it's pronounced salmon. Which is why we always have salmon for the Mishdei Mashiach, the Messiah meal. Because, well, no, not really. But I always thought it would be a good name to resurrect among believers. I think, you know, it'd be fun to name our boys along those lines of names in the Master's genealogy. And I'm sure Salmon would be a popular one. Because he could be Sam for short, right?
Yeah.
Sal.
Salmon.
Sal would work, yeah. Okay. I'm going to give up here, so I don't want to rush this. Chapter 13 is the coolest.
So from the apostles, you're saying the apostles were saying that she married Salmon. Where is that at?
Yeah. It's in Matthew's genealogy. Yep. Yep. Yep, Matthew chapter 1.
So this is not in any of the the rabbinic text then?
That she married Salmon?
Yeah.
No. No, we only know that from Matthew 1. Well, where did it come from? It came from the tradition of the house of David, you know, that it comes from the tradition of the Desposini. Yeshua's brothers and cousins, and it's their tradition. Okay, well, hey, you know what? We're not going to make it any further. That was...
That's pretty close.
Yeah, yeah. And it's after 8 o'clock, and it's a storm out, so thanks.